Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
What does it have to do with Star Wars? Well, at the game, there's also an advertisement that there's going to be a Star Wars night at the Pure Cheese game. So it's really not related at all.
First of all, you're lucky to be alive. So maybe this is the week when you should go out and buy a lottery ticket. I think we can deduce from this is that the ball was not hit by a stormtrooper.
This is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
Live from the Coffee with Kenobi studios, this is Dan Z. We are on the air with Amy Radcliffe and Mediocre Jedi. Tom is on the Disney cruise, so I will do the news. Nick Deco is going to be in later to bring us up to date on some Star Wars video games, and I'm assuming Battlefront 2 will be the primary focus of our conversation. And we're going to talk later about where we are currently as a fan community. So, bringing in, as I said, my guest host today is the writer for StarWars.com, Nerdist, IGN, and the co-host of Lattes with Leia, Amy Radcliffe, and CWK blogger and far, far away radio member, Mediocre Jedi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
You bet. And, of course, both of you have been on the show many times, had many a cup of coffee with us. So we are always happy to have you on. I want to start the show. It was interesting today. It was yesterday. I was getting some more stuff ready in the attic. That seems to be sort of, I'm a broken record about that on the show. But I found my, do either of you remember the Master Replica line of lightsaber hilts?
I've seen pictures, I think, yeah.
They're amazing. They were, back in the day, I think they were, it was about late 90s, early 2000s, when they were really in their popularity. They were a couple $100. When I did it, it sounds like I walked on the street and saw a guy in a trench coat with lightsaber hilts. But I didn't. He was a dealer, and he always gave me a good discount. So I bought a bunch of these things.
It's really sketchy,
man. The dealer that gives you a good discount didn't help the picture.
That's right. I know. That's really clean, isn't it? There were no death sticks involved, if that helps.
It's really no less sketchy than getting a lightsaber out of a trunk in the basement of someone's bar.
Yeah, well, that's actually for the next show. I'm going to save that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, here I've just bought my lightsabers from Target. I feel I'm not doing this right.
Well, these
you must go on a quest. Hilt,
but they're very, very heavy. They're cast right from the film props, and I've always had the Anakin one. It's definitely been a centerpiece of my collection. But yesterday, I found the Darth Sidious one and the Yoda one, and these things are incredible. The Darth Sidious, particularly, I like Darth Sidious, but this lightsaber hilt has got to be one of the top three that they ever made. It's
that
gold.
Sounds
it's
fancy.
It's got this jewel thing in it, and it's remarkable. I'm going to try to put a picture of it up on our Twitter feed, but it's really, really neat.
That's probably got to be one of the two possibly lightsabers that we see that has gold in it. The other one being Mace's. Well, it's been a whole long time just, sitting there in his office encased in that statue. So it's probably in good condition.
Exactly. It's in great condition. So I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to put it. But these are good problems. These are good first world problems to have.
Yeah, it sounds like it's begging for some sort of cool display.
Indeed. Indeed. And we're going to get to that later, too. By the way, thanks again for recommending those shelves to me. Amy was giving me some tips probably about a month ago about how to figures. And so I looked at those and I really liked the shelves that you showed me. But then I found something at IKEA that was really, really thin, and that's going to go up on the wall. And I think that's going to cover quite a bit of stuff too.
Nice. Did you get the picture? What are they called? Maybe just the picture frame shelves.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
I saw that when I was browsing.
I thought it was going to be the baseball bat shelves from Michael's.
Well, that's what
I used. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but
Dan,
they
maybe
take
you
up real estate. That's for sure. Wall real estate.
And that's
Dan thing. Could store that ball that hit him in the head the other day while he's at the ballpark.
Yeah. Oh, that's not it. Terrifying. I felt like you're not safe anywhere. Apparently, at a baseball game.
No. Well, especially the angle that I was hit was pretty much completely impossible for it to happen, but I feel like I'm kind of a lucky person, so I'm glad it worked out the way that it did. I didn't want to break my hand. I'm glad that the blunt for me. So, speaking of bad, and speaking of Darth Sidious, let's talk about Darth Vader number one. Now, when we started the conversation tonight, MJ and I were talking about it just briefly, and he mentioned, but there already was a Darth Vader. What's going on with this series? Well, this series is Charles Soule, who has written the Poe Dameron series, among other things. He's one of the greats, for sure, and not only in Star Wars comics, but just comics in general.
Yeah, he's crazy prolific, too.
Yes, yes. So what did you both think about Darth Vader number one? There's a few key points I want to bring up, and I'm guessing you're thinking the same thing, but I want to hear what you thought of it.
For me, I'll kick things off. I admit that I got behind, well, on a lot of the ongoings because I've switched to trying to read trades rather than single issues. A money issue because I would buy the singles and the trades, but also more of a memory issue that by the time I would get the second issue, you know, whatever the subsequent issue was, I would have forgotten what happened. So I had to go back and read the issue before it anyway. So trades work better for me. So that's a really long way to say I didn't finish the previous Darth Vader comic yet, even though I know it's not tied to this one. But immediately from the get-go, once I found out when this current Darth Vader comic was set, like, that's an era of time I'm interested in. I like that it picked up right after, what is that movie called? Revenge of the Sith. I was like, Revenge of the Jedi. No, Return. No. It's been I don't even know what is today. What today is. It's been a long day. After Revenge of the Sith, I liked what it did with the no moments and made it less of a no moment. And I liked the interaction, like the conversation he and Palpatine had, and kind of watching as that dynamic, it starts to take shape in a new way with him as this, you know, I feel like you can see in this comic very clearly that he's shedding the last of Anakin Skywalker, and Palpatine's helping him do that or pushing him to do that. What'd you think, MJ?
Oh, very much so. I do like that part at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and it's nice to see that play out a bit. It was also quite enjoyable to see Palpatine get thrown up against the wall, which was nice.
Yes, that was cool.
And then he immediately followed up with Vader's first lesson in physical pain, which was also nice. And if I'm not mistaken, it looks like in one of those Force Lightning scenes there, we can actually see Vader's skull through the helmet, which is pretty cool. I thought the art was fantastic.
Also a prescient nod to what's going to happen with Luke many, many years later in front of the Emperor.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's true. And I also want to give the artist a call out. I don't have his name in front of me, but I know it's Giuseppe. Hold on.
I was having trouble pronouncing it.
But I'm like, I at least want to give him a call out because it's as much his story as it is Charles.
And while you're looking
pretend
for that, comics is such a visual medium anyway. So they really do complement each other so well in this story. And we were talking about the fact that it starts where it does. And it's 12 years, you know, let's see. Yeah, it's 12 years later. I always thought the end, 12 years from Revenge of the Sith till now. And I always felt like the no sequence was powerful and poignant, but I also felt like it was a missed opportunity. And I feel like now we have capitalized on that moment. Because I felt like Vader should be incredibly mad, incredibly intense. And the fact that he hurdles the Emperor across the room, and you can tell that has never happened to him before. Hence his very venomous reaction, striking Vader with lightning and holding a blade to him saying, look, if you touch me with the Force again, basically you're over. I found that to be incredibly powerful, and Vader is at such a low point right now anyway, probably as low as he's ever been, that you can just see the psychological torture and the mental abuse and how he just gives in. He gives up.
Sorry, I got distracted by thinking about the no. Sorry, Dan, because I agree with you. I was looking up. It's Giuseppe, I'm going to say, Comancoli. That's close, but he is doing an amazing job on the comic. And
in every sense of the word.
It's beautiful, and I always feel like it's hard, or maybe it feels like it would be hard with Vader to emote the way, you know, without seeing his face. You have to do it with posture and stance, and obviously the script helps that.
That's what.
So, yeah.
That's what Kieran Gillen said. I had the good fortune to talk with him recently about the first series, and he said the biggest challenge for Vader is that he doesn't, his mouth doesn't move. He just got the same expression all the time. There's only so many things you can do with posture and a cape. So you have to kind of imbibe him with this sense of intensity and power and variety. And that's hard to do, but as we said, these two storytellers have done an amazing job. I think the biggest thing for me about this, besides Mass Amita is kind of a General Hux figure, when they show them.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
Quite disturbing. Did you want to say that something about me, that, Amy?
I was going to say, yeah, that surprised me. I was, because I'm like, oh, they're going to hoard those lightsabers for something later that seems like it would be useful. But what a symbolic thing for Mass Amita to take them out and burn them in front of everybody. Be like, you know what, Jedi, bad news. We took care of it. Don't worry. It was unnerving.
It was in a kind of a bluish glow, which I think is symbolic as well. The destruction brings about blue, which usually you equate with hope or life. And I thought that was very ironic.
Almost backfired on them, like quite literally, yes, and figuratively. They may have wanted to test one before they threw the entire mess in on the Holonet. But Mass Amita, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you first. You're the guest.
Oh, well, thanks, Dan. I was thinking that Mass Amita's speech making there, it really made me think of Wendig's portrayal of Mass Amita in the Aftermath trilogy.
Yeah, because if you fast forward all those years, he's quite a different,
yes,
character.
This is where you see he's not, I mean, we always felt like he was a figurehead because of Wendig's trilogy, but he very much seems to be the face of the Empire, at least for this part, if you're not talking about Palpatine. He was frightening. I usually found him to be sort of kind of grating, but he was terrifying in this. I think, however, the biggest thing about this issue was what we learned about kyber crystals and how the Sith have red lightsabers. And basically, Palpatine has this beautiful conversation, and I wrote it down for something I wrote for StarWars.com. And let me see if I can find it here. He says he's talking to Vader, and he says, "Pour your pain into the kyber crystal, and when at last the agony becomes more than it can stand, a beautiful crimson, the color of your rage." So kyber crystals feel pain and they bleed. Are they sentient? I don't know about that. I imagine this is something we will be debating for many, many years. But boy, it makes a Sith lightsaber tragic alongside Darth Vader himself. I thought that was brilliant storytelling.
I wonder if you took Jyn Erso's kyber crystal. Well, I think it's been pretty much incinerated as well. But if you took Jyn Erso's crystal and popped it on a lightsaber, I wonder what color it would come out. Because she dealt with quite a lot of pain growing up as well, and it was right around her neck the whole time.
Oh, that's true. And it makes you wonder, too. I mean, we saw some of that in the Ahsoka novel where,
right,
she made the crystals white. Like, what emotions or what, you know, what triggers certain colors?
Like a mood rock? Like those things.
That's what I was thinking. I was just thinking about it. I'm like, how cool would it be if there was like a mood lightsaber that just changed colors depending on what mood you were when you used it?
Well, that would be really embarrassing.
Would give you away. Like, no secrets.
Exactly.
No, I think the fact that it's, this is more than that. Because I think the Ahsoka thing is definitely a poignant comment. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up from the novel. Because these two, and of course, Anakin and Ahsoka have such a strong connection anyway. But the fact, again, that these things feel pain and they believe that they suffer alongside the Sith Force wielder, I think that really opens up a lot of interesting ideas about what the mythology of Star Wars is.
Yeah, if they respond to emotion to some degree, or your beliefs and how you use the Force, it's pretty wild.
I also wonder if he's actually telling him the truth.
I don't think Palpatine lies so much, though.
That's exactly it. He was the one person who basically told the truth. Although I'd say he told him the truth, but he was misleading in the process of doing so. But yeah, he could have stretched the truth a little bit on that.
which is a lie. I mean, I know that a lot of people have said, and I know I've said it too, I know Amy said it before too, that Palpatine, the trick about him is that he doesn't lie. But really, there are two kinds of lies. Really, there's omission and commission. So withholding information to get your point across, that's a lie and deceit as well, isn't it?
I would think so, and he certainly does that.
The only other thing that we should say before we move on to our next segment is they hint around to the fact, because Vader said, or Palpatine or Vader, one of them says, I could take any of these lightsabers I want, and I can manipulate this crystal, including Master Yoda's. So apparently Yoda's lightsaber is destroyed in this giant disturbing image of all the lightsabers being devoured by flame. And I found that really unsettling, very invasive.
Because Vader said that, right?
I think so. I don't have it in front of me. That would have been smart, but I don't have it in front
of
me.
No, but I just reread it. I think it was him, but my thought was that maybe he didn't realize, like maybe he thought Yoda died.
Oh, that could be.
And that he just assumed it was in there because, in theory, you know, most of the Jedi were killed and he didn't know Yoda got away.
But even the idea of taking someone that's, you know, this weapon is your life, as Obi-Wan says to Anakin in Attack of the Clones, taking something that's so much a part of them and saying, hey, I could corrupt this. I found that it's almost like
that's corrupting a child.
There's something innocent. I don't know that lightsabers are innocent, but do you know what I mean?
Sidious corrupted a child.
That's true.
Anakin was a very pure person in The Phantom Menace. He gave and gave and gave of himself for perfect strangers. And honestly, just looking at when Mos Amedda, and I say Mos with my Texas upbringing, Mos Amedda, Mor Amedda, he's holding a lightsaber up to the sky. Y'all. He's holding a lightsaber up to the sky, as he says, an age of freedom when he's putting on his show. And the little guard at the very end of that sure looks like Yoda's to me. I believe that is Yoda's lightsaber that he's holding up, and it's the last one that he very clearly throws into the incinerator.
I agree.
So maybe that's symbolic itself. Here is the best of the Jedi, quote unquote, and I am destroying him.
And this is the end of them and the start of you, Vader. And see, that's why I found it in the attic. It all ties together.
Wow, that's the force at work, Dan.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is.
Wait, was it right next to your beta player, or?
The beta player is behind me as we speak. It can hear you.
I'm sorry. HAL 9000.
Is it Mas Amedda, or how do you say, how are you both saying it?
I say Amedda, but I don't really know.
I don't either.
It's supposed to be.
I've always said Mas Amedda, just because, again, that's just how I read it in my head. I think, it's the Texas upbringing.
There you go. Well, we'll have to find out about that. The phonetics in Star Wars definitely don't follow the normal protocol, but that's okay.
It's something I really wish they had on the data bank on StarWars.com, like along with the descriptions or little biographical information. They'd be like, this is how you like a sound bites. And some of that stuff is on the soundboard, but for names, I'm like, I would love to know how to pronounce this properly. Not that it really matters, but it makes me happy. So
no, it matters. I think that's brilliant. We should tell Leland that, because I think that it's like on dictionary.com when you click the button and it speaks the word for you.
Yes. And I would I just imagine him going to some intern and being like, this is your job today.
Best job ever.
That would be great.
That might destroy my childhood, though. What
good
what?
Job out of you two. I think you've passed the audition. We're going to keep you around for the rest of the show. How's that sound?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I can do that. I'm on board.
Win. win for us. Very good. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Nick Deco about what's going on in Star Wars video games. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Better than one of those coffee chains, it's Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi is sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Thrawn and Empire's End Aftermath to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. Coffee with Kenobi is also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. A big reason for the success of our show is our CWK Patreon contributors, including Jason Hall, Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Aaron Harris, David Strutt, Connie Shee, Mediocre Jedi, BJ Smith, Nick Deco, Adam Leonard, Mark Suter, Mike Audette, Eric Struthers, Jerry Cantor, and Swara Sala. It's a monthly donation that goes towards show expenses, equipment, and travel. And there are a number of new incentives that we have. The most recent one we mentioned last week is that anyone who contributes $5 or more each month, we get a follow from CWK via our Twitter feed. If you're not already following us, please go ahead and post your Twitter handle on the Patreon page, and you'll know what that is if you are currently a member. And we will make sure that that happens. $10 or more, you will get a link to an exclusive Google Hangout. We just had one. We recorded one yesterday. I had a really great time engaging with our listeners. Huge props to Aaron Harris for being such a great contributor to that. We had a ball. Would love to have many more people next month, of course. $35 or more, you'll get the additional things, the Google Hangout, plus you'll get a CWK coffee mug, and it goes on and on. In fact, there's some things that you can do that are so, well, they're cool. I mean, you will get to host the show for a week, 2 weeks, or maybe even a month. And as you know, with the new format, I always have two new guest hosts, and we would love to have you be one of them. Please check out the show notes or our webpage for much more information.
Sign up for a CWK Patreon page.
Nick Deco is with us. Nick is going to be a recurring guest, very similar to what we did with Jason Graham in the canon segments. Nick's going to be discussing Star Wars video games with us on the show once a month. And Nick is one of the first CWK family members to contribute a segment to the original version of the show. And when I knew we were going to the new format, I didn't want to lose your segments because you're such a add so much to the show when we had it on monthly. And plus, it's really fun to talk to you. We met at Celebration. So welcome officially to Coffee with Kenobi.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. And yeah, I can't believe Celebration was 2 months ago. It still feels like it was like 2 weeks ago. And I remember when we started these conversations, when I reached out to you and Corey way back in like right after The Force Awakens, I was talking about how video games and Star Wars is so intertwined, especially with some of the storylines. And as we all well know from last week, Battlefront 2 was on the horizon. And so have you guys seen and heard a little bit about what's going to be included in Battlefront 2?
I have. I watched the trailer and kind of tuned in to the I watched some not highlights reels, discussions, I guess, after the EA presentation at E3. That's a lot of E's.
Yes, it is. I think, Amy, you probably then saw that this has a campaign now surrounding a canon story around, I think, Iden Verso is her name, and Inferno Squadron. And so, like, that was the whole conversation I had with Corey and Dan way back when was like this, you know, there's a lot of storylines that are canon in the old video games. And this is really the first entry back into that platform for Lucasfilm and Disney and EA actually having, you know, if you are as a Star Wars fan want to know more about what's going to happen to these characters, you have to play this video game. And I think for a lot of us that do play the video games, whether it's on the mobile devices or on consoles, this is kind of like, yes, finally, something that is, you know, was built for video games and fans that, you know, we can immerse ourselves in. It's not just running around in the shooter and multiplayer and, you know, trying not to die every 30 seconds. So that is, I mean, that's the hugest, that is the largest news probably so far for 2017, is that we have a new platformer game for Star Wars. It's going to be canon. You know, this is going to take place right after Return of the Jedi and lead us all the way up to The Force Awakens. I think we're going to get a little bit of The Last Jedi in there too. You probably saw that the DLCs that are going to be released for this game, the downloadable content, starting in December, will have Finn and Captain Phasma. Oh, okay. And they'll be from The Last Jedi. Some of the Rey and Kylo Ren will have exclusive Last Jedi costumes and abilities. that are also considered canon?
That's kind of a spoiler. I mean, I don't know for sure, but the way they talk about
I would
say now on the show, because I'm not going to violate one of our main mantras here on Koth with Kenobi, but they said something about Rey that we didn't see in The Force Awakens, and I thought, oh no, did they just reveal something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
I don't know, but I feel like if it's in the official promo, is it really a spoiler?
Well, no.
Like, I mean, Lucasfilm.
Well, are you talking Dan's spoiler or just normal people's spoiler?
Well, apparently normal people's spoiler.
Well, I guess it's hard to say, Amy, right?
To me, a spoiler,
it's subjective.
Before I'm seeing in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It depends. It kind of depends on how you. And I think that's part of the thing, is too, is that you look at Star Wars video games, it's still not. I know there's a lot of people that play them. There's a big community, but it's still, I would say, you know, not as highly anticipated because they don't come out as frequently as books, as comic books, and as other things that are canon that we look towards to kind of learn more about the storylines, right? So unless you're really kind of paying attention and you have been a video gamer, you might not be looking at some of these things for insight. And so it could be considered a spoiler on a certain level.
And I guess to if it makes any more sense, Amy, I don't even like when my wife goes Christmas shopping. I don't even like knowing what store she went to. That's how weird I am.
That's not weird. That's your personal taste. I can respect that.
So, Nick, before we go a little bit further into Battlefront 2, because there's a ton of stuff that came out and is still kind of been disseminated, give us a little bit of background on what fostered your interest in Star Wars video games in the first place.
Oh, we can go all the way back to when I was 8 years old. I think it's kind of, just kind of the natural progression of things, right? Like grew up, like I think a lot of us did in the 90s with not a lot of Star Wars things happening. And so, you know, you kind of look towards the books, and then when there was, you know, the next things really were kind of the drips of some video games. And so for me, that was the only way to get a real immersive fix before the prequels came out was, hey, we got a Star Wars video game. It's the only way I can actually visually see the characters and storylines that I love, besides rewatching the original trilogy again and again on VHS or then DVD, whenever that changeover happened.
So, okay, that makes sense. And I mean, there's been so much. Do you have a favorite, by the way? Super Star Wars, or anything like that?
So, I would see. Let's see. Favorite. So I would say new favorite right now is Galaxy of Heroes for the mobile device. And I've probably talked about that a lot on the segments from the old format of the show, because it just allows you to play as so many different characters. There's no real storyline to it. You just kind of get to unlock your favorite characters and you get to see their abilities and you get to match up against other people. And there's a really great community around that game that, you know, supports each other and just want it and is competitive. But I would say for the old versions, I love fighter pilot games. Rogue Squadron for the Nintendo 64, where you got to, you know, fly missions in Hoth, or you got to fly missions in planets that were just out of, like, really I wouldn't say the obscure parts of the Star Wars universe, but we all know, like, Timothy Zahn's trilogy. But there were planets from there, and then there were also planets from, like, the Dark Empire, where the Emperor was reborn, and you got a chance to, you know, play on Mon Calamar against World Destroyers, which were really, like, really out there as part of, like, the Star Wars fandom back then, and still kind of are, you know. Don't really talk about them much, but that was such a great game because they incorporated so many aspects of different parts of the books that you would have read, and, you know, as a fan, you would have known more about. And they really added a different level of gameplay that you didn't see currently, like then and now. You really don't see that kind of in-depth detail to a bunch of different storylines. You kind of just take a track around one, two, or three different storylines you're following. And so for me, it was always the appeal of, oh, it's a fighter pilot game, but it's also Star Wars.
Well, storylines, that's a perfect transition point, because the last Battlefront seemed to be kind of polarizing for people. How much of the commentary on the first one has impacted this new iteration? Because the first one had no campaign, correct?
Correct. As you guys saw, Amy, as you saw from EA on Saturday, you know, they looked at John Boyega's tweet, you know, and the actress that plays John, the actress that plays
Iden Verso in this game, you know, she, you know, referenced John Boyega's tweet about, hey, when are we going to get campaign for Battlefront for Star Wars, as the tweet heard around the world. And, you know, that I think really motivated EA to get behind this idea of, okay, last time we didn't make a single player campaign for Battlefront because we wanted to get this to market. We were asked to kind of get this out there. We didn't, you know, we sacrificed the campaign just for the experience of getting a new Star Wars video game out when The Force Awakens was released. And so now that they've heard from a lot of fans, including myself, and probably everybody else that I've talked to, that, you know, we also want to have a storyline. We want to have something we're accomplishing in the Star Wars universe as we're playing this game. And so they took it to heart. And now we have a canon storyline that we haven't had before. We haven't had anything canon in a video game that's been new for quite a long time. I'm pretty sure none of the Disney Infinity stuff was canon, where you could play and jump around Tatooine as Rey. I'm pretty sure that wasn't canon, but don't take my word for it.
I don't think it was.
I don't think when BB-8 was running around different planets, it was canon either. So, you know, that's the fun part about this is now you have this amazing storyline, and, you know, especially from something we haven't had before any Star Wars video game. I'm really trying to stretch my mind here when I went back and looked at different games that came out, but there, you know, I think the last like Imperial point of view video game was TIE Fighter, like way back when.
From the early 90s, right? Yeah. Is that one of those?
I think so. It definitely is from
DOS, right?
And you have like the different perspectives. You know, you have Battlefront. Battlefront 2, the old Battlefront 2. So now this gets all confusing. I wish they would have renamed things.
The old ones were also just Battlefront and Battlefront 2?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes.
The Darth Vader comic series.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, like, and that Battlefront 2 had a campaign mode, but you followed clone troopers, and then the clone troopers eventually turned to stormtroopers. And so you could say that's also from the Imperial perspective, but I think it's more or less from the uniqueness of a clone trooper and their lifespan over the Civil War.
That was fun. The graphics and the gameplay, and they had that huge mass. What was it? 20 different people were playing online streaming, and you could tune in and watch. Mm-hmm. Did you watch that?
I watched a little bit of that on Saturday. I have to admit, I think it was. I enjoyed it a lot, especially from the perspective when people would play the game and mess up a little bit, and then you see them, like, they would go to somebody, and then that person would die, and they have to go to somebody else, and that person would crash a vulture droid into a building, just like you would as a regular player at home trying to figure this game out. You would do the same thing. So you kind of felt vindicated as a fan or as a player, like, yep, I do the same thing. So, but watching the game and seeing just the level of detail to feed that EA put into this game was amazing. I feel like it was like, you know, and just watching it from, you know, your laptop screen, but it was so detailed that you could only just hope for more than the best when it comes to the rest of the planets that they're building. And then the little other details, like if you would listen, you could hear the clone troopers' voices sounded just like Jango Fett, and it sounded just like the voices from the Clone Wars TV show.
Oh, wow.
And even the battle droids sound just like the battle droids from Clone Wars, from Phantom Menace. So,
I would assume.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see when that comes out, who the credits go to. But EA really is going into the detail. They're really listening to fans. I think they heard that, you know, folks appreciated the multiplayer, getting a new game out there to the community. But at the same time, it was lacking that campaign, that story mode, that immersive feel that really comes into taking the dedication and time to looking at, okay, what parts of this can we really kick up a notch to make fans feel like, yep, you're fighting along a clone trooper on Theed or the other planets that they're going to have.
Well, it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. And your enthusiasm is, as always, infectious. So, Nick, thank you for this first segment. It was a lot of fun. Where can people find you online if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Sure, yeah. It was a great pleasure, guys. Great chatting with you guys. And if you have any questions, you want to talk about Star Wars video games or anything else, you can find me on Twitter @NickDeco. And that's the best way to get me.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Nick. When we return, I will go ahead and do the news. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects, top-notch narrators, and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From Han Solo to C-3PO to Admiral Akbar, you'll recognize all of your favorite characters. Listen to movie tie-ins like Rogue One and The Force Awakens, to book titles such as Thrawn and Empire's End Aftermath, to classic audiobooks like William Shakespeare's Star Wars. With Star Wars audiobooks, you'll have plenty of Star Wars listening to keep you entertained. Visit PenguinRandomHouseAudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app features incredible images from many aspects of the saga, including the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, The Force Awakens, and Rogue One. It's the quality you have come to expect from Topps. It's also easy to get into and really fun too. Your favorite Star Wars characters, scenes, and moments are in every pack. To get started, download the app for free from iTunes or Google Play, and then be sure to open the app each day for free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina. Plus, if you can't get what you're looking for, there's a place to trade with your friends as you complete your Star Wars collection. And if you're an experienced collector, there are exclusive cards, special inserts, and autograph opportunities for you to enjoy. Don't worry about missing the cards and sets you want either, as you can sign up for notifications right on the app. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, Tom is on a Disney cruise, the Fantasy, I believe, with his family. So I'll be doing the news today. Amy, of course, you know all about how amazing Disney cruises can be.
Yes, I can't wait to go on my next one.
You already have one scheduled.
Whenever that is. No, just whenever. I really want to do an Alaska one one day.
I think that would be incredible.
I would not go on any other cruise line.
Oh, I agree. Once you experience what Disney has to offer, the food, everything, I mean, I could spend hours talking about how incredible that is.
Do you think that the two of y'all are a little biased on Disney? And I'm just asking, since, I mean, Amy, you do a little bit of Disney stuff, and Dan, you used to work there.
My honeymoon was there too. I proposed to Deanna there as well.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah, I'm not a little biased.
Totally not biased.
I mean, I'm just wondering.
I'm all the way biased, but no, it's incredible. We'll send the Coffee with Kenobi jet and get you on one of those cruises.
I appreciate that.
That's what my Patreon bucks.
Everybody in the Coffee with Kenobi family. So
yes,
the reason I bring up the cruise, besides Tom, of course, in the news, does such a great job. So we'll see if we can fill his shoes. On June 8th, Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, A Galaxy of Stories, coming to the D23 Expo. And on the Disney Parks blog, they had a logo. And apparently at D23, they're going to have a pavilion dedicated to the Star Wars themed lands coming to Disneyland and Hollywood Studios.
Yes.
And Amy, are you going to be at D23?
Yes, I will be. And barring any other commitments when the panel or like when the convention opens, that's what I'm going to be doing first, even if it means standing in line.
Can you sort of translate for me? Because I read the release and I was just deliriously happy, because anytime I find out about what's going on with the theme parks and Star Wars, I get so happy. But is it just like they're just going to do a little more show and tell kind of stuff, or what exactly is going on here?
That exactly. D23 is known for having these little pavilions set up. Like, for example, at the last one, they had a pavilion set up for Pandora World of Avatar and Shanghai Disney, because those weren't open yet. So it's a little area, kind of like, like you're in an exhibit floor, decent sized booth space, so to speak, and lots of concept art. They're going to have models. And they also mentioned they're going to have cast members and Imagineers on hand to kind of talk about what they've been doing on the project. I don't think they're going to give away the farm just yet, because it's not opening until 2019, but this is presumably the last D23, because D23 happens every other year, the expo, before it happens or before it opens. So I'm excited to see the model. I'm excited to see new concept art. And I'm guessing they will, Star Wars Land will have a decent chunk of the Parks and Resorts presentation as well. And I really hope we get a name.
Oh my gosh. I can honestly say that when they first announced Star Wars Land 2 years ago at D23, I was so happy that I actually had tears in my eyes. And I don't often say that about things that are not related to my family, but it really hit me because I know that someday I'm going to be able to walk up to a life-size Millennium Falcon with my son, and I can't even imagine how that's going to feel.
I almost used an inappropriate word, but it's going to feel magical. That's how it's going to feel.
Through the magic of editing, I could delete out your inappropriate word.
That's okay. I will just save you the trouble.
Another wonderful thing that happened this week, I don't know if wonderful is the right word, but well, it really was. It was wonderful because Carrie Fisher has touched so many of us. She's just an amazing person and inspiration in so many ways. And Mark Hamill honored her at the Tony Awards a few nights ago, and it was really lovely. It was we've seen Hamill so much, of course, in the films, at celebrations and conventions, and he's just seems to be such a magnanimous personality. But I've never seen him so serious and so impassioned this way, and it really was a lovely thing.
I didn't see it actually.
I did not either. I heard about it.
Oh, you should look it up online. One of the things that he says, he gave everybody advice and told them not to be sad, that Carrie would not want anyone to be sad. And he said, think of Carrie Fisher as looking down at you now from heaven, giving everybody the middle finger. That was his quote.
It's perfect.
And I got to say, I always, even though, I mean, you know, eventually it happened anyway because you just thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. But when you and I met, Amy, at Indiana Comic Con, you remember Corey and I telling you about meeting Carrie and sort of persuading you, hey, you really need to do this tomorrow? And then, of course, the glitter happened. Do
you yes. That? Yes. And thank goodness you all talked about that, because that's one of my most treasured memories.
I love it when I hear you tell that story, by the way. It's just really cool.
Yeah, because I know I was on the fence, because I'm like, oh, I don't usually pay for autographs, but glitter, and it's Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, I feel like you would have done it anyway, because, how could you not take advantage of that? And she was and is super, super cool. Speaking of super cool, yeah. The Yak Face, the Great Collector site, they have, and I'm going to put the link in the Skype conversation for the two of you to look at, but Hera is, of course, an incredibly popular figure, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on, some updates to the figure. They've redesigned her. It almost looks like Vanessa as
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it was Friday, September 1st, and she looks amazing. She's the first wave of the Black Series figures. She's going to be an incredibly hard one to find.
What were you going to say, MJ?
Oh, I was just going to say I can't. I've gotten to the point, not in a creepy way, that I kind of tend to equate Vanessa and Hera. So when I see the action figure, and I'm like, yeah, I could totally see that, and I can hear it in her voice and whatnot. But if I'm not mistaken, they did show this. I can't remember if Hasbro had one, a physical copy, in their display case at San Diego Comic-Con last year. I think they did.
I think I saw pictures of that.
Yeah, I think I should go back and check my pictures from that, but that was definitely a nice thing to see.
I can't remember. Well, I mean, you and Mike covered it for us last year. I can't remember talking about that. I feel like that we've seen it, but this seems to be a new sculpt, or they went back kind of to the drawing board to revitalize it, because she's an important character to all of us. And this is cool. The Kanan one, I felt like, didn't really look like the animated Kanan, but it did sort of look like a animated / Freddy hybrid. So it seems like they've got this going on here, but it seems to be even better of a sculpt.
Which is good. So I think that's sometimes a weakness with the Black Series, both on the smaller scale and the 6 inches, that the faces are not not as spot on as I would like them to be.
Poe Dameron, we're looking at you.
Oh, yes. That one's a terrific / terrible example.
Yeah, it was so bad.
Definitely something to keep our eyes out for come Force Friday. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about the current state of fandom. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Better than one of those coffee chains, it's Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi was sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Thrawn and Empire's End Aftermath to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. Coffee with Kenobi was also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. Active in Star Wars fandom and very well respected as fans and people, so I wanted to get both of your opinions on how things are going in fandom. We're all active on Twitter. We all, love the... But to me, again, Star Wars is a community. It's more than a fandom. It's a community. And while we don't always agree, we often... Some people in fandom disagree, but I think it's important not to be disagreeable. Now, that being said... to the two of you, where are we now in the world of Star Wars fandom as far as these kind of topics?
I think, and you can chime in on this, MJ, and you too, Dan, because I'm sure you experience it, that certainly one thing that's different than, I don't know, even a few years ago is there are so many venues and kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not subcategories, kind of just smaller groups, whatever that word, that word is.
Something
like that, where people can, kind of form their own communities around podcasts or around gaming, or, there's Reddit boards just for Star Wars Destiny where people talk about, not that I look at those regularly, to talk about decks and whatever. But so you can really kind of find your tribe, so to speak, your tribe of friends, your group of people on Twitter or in Facebook groups, and get different perspectives, but also in a way that you can kind of control some. And sometimes, I guess Twitter is not a good example because it's not a private, place unless you block a whole bunch of people, which seems to defeat the purpose. But on Facebook, where you can have private groups, I don't know. Like, I think it's just interesting. You can kind of curate your fandom experience online a little, and just that there are more places than ever to communicate with other fans online in different ways. Does that make sense?
It does.
Absolutely.
MJ, what about you?
I know that I participate in one or two. Actually, Twitter is really the only place where I'm active on social media. Try to limit my diet, keep it to one thing. But I do participate in several DMs of folks where we know each other well enough that we can make comments to one another that we know we don't have to worry about offending each other in 140 characters or less, and then having someone out of nowhere who does not necessarily understand where I'm coming from say, hey, you can't say that. It's like, well, that's not really what I meant. And then next thing you know, it's all spun out of control. Because I know Dan and Amy, I know that y'all do a great job of staying not positive, like everything's great, but positive as in friendly with one another online. And I know that in many ways, well, Amy, you use Twitter as a source of your business as well. So you've got that professional aspect of it. And I, of course, don't monetize mine, so I can kind of say whatever I want. Well, not saying that you don't, but I think the two of y'all and a lot of other people that I know are very friendly. And sometimes it is kind of an echo chamber. If you only surround yourself with nice people, you're going to hear nice things all the time. So
interesting. No, I totally, well, thank you, by the way, for that. It was very kind of you to say. I think there's plenty of times I see things that, not just Star Wars related, but just in general on Twitter, that I think is outlandish. And of course, we're all thinking about politics. We know this. And I think we're all in the same boat as far as our political views. But that's something that, while I definitely feel compelled, I have to be sort of careful with where I jump in and how I do it. Because for one thing, I believe in trying to create a positive spin and trying to find a healthy way to open up communication and dialogue. Because as you said, Amy, a lot of Twitter, I think of Dan Slott, who is, I think, an amazing writer. I love his work on Spider-Man. I think he's one of the best writers of Spider-Man in the history of the comic, and I've read just about everyone that was ever published. But he gets attacked often. Now, he puts out his views very readily, and that's kind of what you get with Twitter. But I think that's okay. I mean, but the trolling thing and getting mad at someone for their beliefs and making them the sum of their beliefs and kind of creating a judgment about them, that's obviously not healthy, and that's not a good way to create dialogue, because how are you going to understand one another if you can't have a conversation? And I'm also coming at this from a teacher and as a parent, because I know that dialogue is in conversation and rhetoric is how you get to know one another. And if you're already going to attack that person because your beliefs, and whether it's something as simple as Jar Jar or, you know, the issues of having a black stormtrooper or gender, which, by the way, aren't issues, but obviously people make it into that. So there are a lot of slippery slopes out there sometimes, I think, to trap you. But I think if you circumnavigate it with wisdom and kindness and also without compromising your principles, I think that you're in a good place.
I agree. And I think it's a couple of things that I think when, and I agree, I see it with Dan all the time, is people will troll him. And when people come at it from, you know, accusatory or an attacking point of view, or they're just being straight up mean, like, that's not somebody, like, I'm always baffled. I'm like, if you're that upset about whatever Dan's saying, like, why follow him? Like, if it's not going to be a dialogue, it's just going to be, or, you know, if you're just following somebody and you don't have a dialogue, you just want to attack them for things they're tweeting, just unfollow and make everybody happier, including yourself.
Wow. I did not realize that that was an issue for you, Dan. I mean,
Dan Slott, not Dan Z.
Dan Slott.
Oh my gosh. I was like, wait a minute. I was like, Dan Z is like the nicest guy in the world, people. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, but and also from the other side of that, like, it's tricky sometimes, right? Because dialogue is good, but there are sometimes people who, and sometimes I find that people who don't even follow me will jump into a conversation just to give me a hard time or mm-hmm. to attack me or to disagree with something I'm saying. And I see people go back and forth with tweets like that. I'm like, you know what? Ain't nobody has time or energy for that. And I mute them. If it's somebody who's coming in, you know, with that kind of like, I punch you in the face attitude and you're dumb and feminism is terrible. Yay. Men and no ladies, like that kind of attitude. I'm like, there's no discourse with you that I can have that's going to be productive in 140 character format. So I'm just going to mute you and move on with my life. And that's okay.
It's great. That's one of my favorite things about Twitter. I wish I could mute people in real life.
Dude.
No, I agree. That's the thing. There is no dialogue. If someone is so set in their ways, they're not going to listen to what you're going to say, or they're just going to attack you personally. That's a problem. I also think it's tricky when someone is addressing an issue and they don't even understand the issue. Like, for example, when people say feminism is whatever and they make it a pejorative, well, to be a feminist means that you believe in equal work for equal pay, that you believe in equality. I mean, that's at its root. That's what feminism is. I took a lot of graduate classes on feminism and sexist literature and sort of things to look for. And I think if people knew that, when I tell my students, I say, are you a feminist? And most people look at me like I'm trying to bait them. And I say, you should all have your hands up, because do you believe that if you both have the same qualifications, regardless of your gender, you should have the same pay? And universally, I've never had a student say no. I said, well, then you are a feminist. So I don't know why even a word like that can scare people, but I think there's a lot of, misinterpretations. I'll try to put a positive spin on
it. Oh, no, that's for sure. Because I hear that from women, too. They're like, I'm not a feminist. I'm like, do you believe men and women are equal and should be equal? Yeah. Then I'm like, you're a feminist. Yeah. Like, it's not a, if you don't want to call yourself that, or I didn't, but it's there in black and white.
Right. Whether you think water is wet or not, it's still wet.
Yes. That's a great way to look at it.
It could be frozen. I mean, I don't mean it totally well, actually, you, but never mind.
So what kind of changes have you both seen in fandom over the past year as far as things go? We talked about this in between breaks, but the reaction to Wonder Woman, which is a film, by the way, that I still have not seen, it is killing me. I
really want
to see it. So
Dan,
my schedule will open up so I can do that, because this is actually a
good movie so that good.
As interested in as I am, so I want to make this happen, but not knowing what is in the film, I can assume that's going to be incredible with some powerful messages, but there seems to be some people that feel threatened by that, which I think that says more about them than the issue itself.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yes, it's ridiculous. And it brings us. Oh, go ahead, MJ.
Oh, Amy and I are going to stay on the line. Dan, you go see Wonder Woman and come back.
We got this.
And let us know what you think.
I have faith in you both.
Also, when people say the various things about Wonder Woman or Gal Gadot specifically, there's no way she could. Well, okay. Well, first off, yes, there's no way. This is not a comic book. But at the same time, I mean, Gal Gadot herself is an Israeli Defense Force veteran. She was a combat instructor. I think she's got the chops for the role. So,
and she certainly trained for it. I mean,
absolutely.
I had the extreme pleasure of visiting that set while they were filming. And
what?
Like, as soon as it was amazing. As soon as I saw her, I'm like, you are an Amazon. Like, this isn't even a question, the way you carry yourself, the dedication you clearly have, because we watched her run against a green screen forever. You're an Amazon. And she completely delivered. I can't wait for you to see it, Dan.
I'm excited.
Yes.
Also, side note, I wish there was an Amy Radcliffe, like, camp, because I think I would love to live your life for just a week. That'd be so awesome.
Well, if you pick the week, most of the weeks when I'm just sitting at my desk for 10 to 11 hours a day, you might change your mind. But I do have a lot of cool opportunities. I cannot pretend that is not the case.
Well, and honestly, you know, another sidebar, I mean, you have those opportunities because you are unabashedly you, and you work hard, and you don't compromise. And I think that's the quality that I want to see in fandom. That's the quality that Wonder Woman has, and that's what it is. We make our success, and we can do that in fandom too. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, Star Wars, the thing that I love about Star Wars is that it tells the stories, and I said this last week, it tells the stories about our culture, about our society, that a lot of people are afraid to bring up, or they don't want to bring up, or they don't understand. So you take a fictional universe and you create an opportunity to tell truths through fantasy, through science fiction, through the Force. And I think if sometimes people take a step back and look at that. When I first started Coffee with Kenobi, a fellow teacher who's a great guy said to me, I mean, Star Wars, there's really not that much there, Dan. You're going to run out of material. And, well, we haven't. but
not even close.
Because, you know, there's natural misconceptions about things. And I don't know if that's people are afraid of just seeing things from a different point of view, or I don't know. I realize this has kind of become more than a Star Wars conversation, but I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it's important to realize.
Absolutely.
And I think some people are dismissive as still, especially of, you know, sci-fi and fantasy stories when I'm biased, clearly, because those are the kind of stories I like the most, but they have so much relevance and they usually have such a timeless quality about them that you can find something in them that relates to whatever the current situation is. Star Wars happens to relate to the real world quite a bit right now, but so does Lord of the Rings. So does a lot of these kind of classic tales, because they're based on, you know, archetypes that may be fictional, but they had a basis in reality and humanity, and there's a lot to be learned from, and you can be so inspired by fiction. Wonder Woman inspired me in so many ways. which on the surface you're like, yes, I was inspired by this fictional character in a comic book film. Sounds utterly ridiculous, but it was such a powerful, so many powerful messages throughout that.
Well, and being motivated by mythology and fiction and storytelling is an older idea and tradition than the Bible itself. So it's a natural, wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's been around. I want to point out something. It's been around for a bit. A quote that I really like. It's from tomorrow or this upcoming episode of American Gods, but I won't say who says it. And I don't really think it's a spoiler. Even if you watch American Gods, though, Dan, I guess it could be a spoiler because it's a line from an episode you haven't seen. You're saying. Okay. Okay. But it's just, there's no end to the cruelty of men when threatened by a strong woman. And once I heard that, I'm like, this is the reaction to the Wonder Woman women only screenings in a capsule, in a nutshell.
It is.
Because even though I feel like we've made good progress in Star Wars fandom to some degree, as far as understanding that females are part of, it's funny, right? I feel like we've made progress in that regard in Star Wars fandom that, hey, there are a lot of lady fans mm-hmm. who are into Star Wars and just as much as you are. And it's not a test anyway. It's not a competition. Exactly. So now I think Star Wars fandom is working on a place where they need to, where we all need to be like, hey, you also people of color are fans. Also, people of different kinds of sexualities are fans, like, and the universe needs to represent that, the fictional universe. And it's starting to, but I think that's kind of where we are with fandom as far as being more inclusive and less, less exclusive. I lost my train of thought.
No, I totally see that. And you do know, you probably won't admit to this because you're very humble, but you're one of the reasons that I think females have more of a strong voice in Star Wars fandom.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm certainly opinionated.
This is a good thing. So,
I'd agree with that, Dan. If I can, I'd throw out there a couple of very, very strong female voices in Star Wars fandom that I interact with or I see. On Twitter on a regular basis. And I'm very happy for that. And I really only got back into, honestly, into my adult Star Wars isms when I first joined Twitter. And I started following people who were saying good things. And I think both of y'all were among the first few. And I think Dan's absolutely right. Between you and several other folks that I don't think Star Wars fandom, as I know it anyway, on Twitter would be the same without y'all. I know that there's some other projects that I'm involved with from time to time, and we go out of our way to make sure that we're representing a good cross-section of gender, of sexuality, of color. It's important to us. And I think it's becoming the standard. I think it's going to become the standard. It's getting there amongst the across the fandom.
So we talked. I agree with you. Well said. And we talked a lot about some things that we definitely are not keen on, to put it mildly. What are some ways we think we can bolster our community to make it even stronger than it already is?
I think something that's important, other than just being a kind person and being mindful that, hey, other people have feelings just like you do, and just be considerate, especially on social media where you can't always give context. But I think it's really important when we have discussions about fandom, and especially along the lines of being more inclusive, to remember your role, remember how much representation you have in things, and maybe don't speak for people that don't have that kind of representation, and try to be more understanding. I think that's something that I feel comes up in a lot in the current. You know, if you look at any comment on an Aftermath book, it's a lot of people not thrilled about Singer's Singer being in the book and being homosexual. And it's really frustrating.
It is, because full disclosure, he is absolutely one of my
amazing
Star Wars. He's great.
Oh yeah,
he's super cool, very charming, and very. He's like kind of a good Thrawn, I guess.
I could see that. Yeah. So just be kind and be open-minded and be aware of the kind of representation you've seen and where that, hey, it'd be cool for lots of other people to get some of the pie too.
Absolutely.
MJ, were you going to say something?
Did we lose MJ?
Am I back? I'm back.
There you are. You're back.
We thought that your avatar attacked you.
It does sometimes. Dan and Amy and I were, as we were discussing earlier, you know, as a cishet white dude, it's really easy for me to say, hey, everything's cool. I don't have an issue here. But I've never had anyone come out and personally disagree with me at a convention, but everyone else's mileage may vary. And I'm sure there are probably people that listening to this who've said, well, that hasn't been my situation at all. And I get that. One of the things I do is try to make sure, for example, not speak out, try to speak louder than the other voices that are out there. Yes. For sure.
Yes.
And I do my best. I even checked in with some of my lady friends that I was podcasting with the other day. And I said, hey, I didn't butt in too much, did I? Because I have a habit of doing that. And it's easy to do on Skype when you can't see everyone else making the body language for I have something to say. But I try to know my place. If someone speaks up and says, well, this just happened and it makes me feel bad because... okay, maybe it didn't bother me, but I surely want to hear their side of it because maybe I'm using speech. Maybe I'm using a term. Maybe I'm continuing to use a meme.
The perception defines reality, and so sometimes people run with it without finding out explanations. But that's the thing, you know, being honest, being open, not compromising who you are, but also being open to other points of view. And naturally, we come at it from a place of we want to foster something positive and something encouraging. We want to inspire hope, and that's what Star Wars is all about. So, very interesting. This is definitely a conversation that we will be revisiting often as the show goes on. So we're going to go ahead and take our last break and return with your emails, tweets, and Facebook posts. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Better than one of those coffee chains, it's Coffee with Kenobi.
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, Penguin Random House Audio and the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen to new and archived shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, our website, or wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite shows. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, too, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and a little show I like to call Lattes with Leia.
It's all right.
I've heard good things.
I have, too.
I heard they don't drink lattes.
That's true.
From Jonathan Cohn, my top 10 would be, and this is going to go from 10 to 1, Emperor Palpatine, 9, Ahsoka, 8, Finn, Senator Mon Mothma, 6, Senator Organa, 5, Rey, 4, Vader, 3, Qui-Gon, 2, Thrawn, and 1, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he says, P.S. I hope you're able to do more book chats with authors like Timothy Zahn, Chuck Wendig, James Luceno, and other prevalent writers because they are my favorites to listen to. Well, I hope that as well. Something we are always efforting to do. I like your top 10. I must admit I'm a little surprised that Mon Mothma got so high, but... and Jonathan does point out in his email the work that was done on her character in Rogue One and Empire's End, plus Lost Stars really kind of fleshes her out a little bit more, too.
Yeah, that's a good list.
That's a good list. Senator Organa?
Yeah. That was a little high as well. And here's the thing I'm wondering. So can either of you off the cuff give me a top 10?
Oh, no.
No problem.
No.
I feel like I'd be vilified by myself for getting wrong.
I don't think
there's no wrong.
Vilified me thus far.
I'll get on that.
There you go. You can tweet it out. We'll look forward to that.
So I could.
To Amy Radcliffe and Mediocre Jedi for coming on the show today. Where can people reach out to either of you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello? And please feel free to plug anything that you've got going on.
I will start. People can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Amy_geek. You can find my writing at Nerdist.com and StarWars.com. I do two other podcasts. I do Lattes with Leia, part of the Lovely Coffee with Kenobi Network, and also a Disney podcast called The Disney Diet, hashtag not just about food. It's about all things Disney.
I love that podcast, by the way. I must
thank you.
I was sad that I wasn't hosting a Disney podcast because I love Disney. That you do such a great job on that show.
Thanks. You have to come on as a guest sometime.
Oh, man, that'd be the best.
Yay.
You can find me at, and this is MJ, not Amy. You can find me at Mediocre Jedi, just like it sounds, on Twitter. And I occasionally blog for a little website called Coffee with Kenobi. And I am a proud member of the Far, Far Away radio team. You can find us online or wherever paperbacks are sold. And we will be soon. I don't have a date off the top of my head, but soon we will be dropping our third installment, Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, of our audio drama. Episode 4 and Episode 5 are a whole lot of fun. You can find that at farfarawayradio.com.
So good. You are one talented individual. I really love your work on those.
Oh, thanks. I'm a play a little green dude. Not he talks backwards. Not true. No, he's a big green dude.
Indeed. Yeah. So thank you. Thanks again, both of you, for coming on. We're going to be back next week with two new co-hosts and more Star Wars talk. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.